Work against now, so
And we didn't need that preamble either, so that's good. Good moment. Right. The intentional vomiting exercise actually isn't used very often, but there are times when there is a very good use for it and is very helpful. On the whole, nowadays, we don't teach it as part of the standard pack of offloading exercises. And I would only give it to someone who actually needed it. So then we just need to have a look. Why do we vomit in the first place? If we've drunk too much alcohol, or we have got eaten rotten food or something like that, the body's natural reaction is, oops, I don't like this. I'm going to throw it out. And then we feel better, don't we? We've had that horrible feeling of being sick and knowing we've got to do something with it and it needs to come out. Okay. And all is well. However, we also have nausea, sometimes as an emotional reaction, sometimes if we've had shock, or we've had, well, I don't know, or somebody, in fact, I had a situation with it myself recently, where out of a complete misunderstanding, somebody was extremely angry with me with no good reason at all. It was while I was on holiday, and I had a real wrench actually in the solar plexus, and I'm not often aware of my solar plexus, but there it was, just close to the stomach. And so that was my reaction, and I really did want to be sick. In actual fact, I wasn't, but I could have been if that feel, what I mean is, could have done the vomiting exercise. If the feeling had persisted and it was not going to go away, and clearly emotionally it was still clinging on in there and causing me a lot of discomfort. That is where Luther was quite simple and said, look, we can do pretend vomiting and just release that feeling. So if you go into the physiology of the act of vomiting, it all happens at the join of the stomach, which is the top of the stomach, and the bottom of the esophagus. And the pyloric sphincter muscle that at that point is actually, it can be used as a valve. It can actually redirect either, mostly the normal function is to swallow the food, it goes down into the stomach and on. But with this, where we've got that dilemma, I really feel sick, I want to throw something out, then that muscle can act in reverse and throw the substance out if there is any. However, if we've got that emotional response, we can do a few. This is where it gets a little bit technical and maybe not very pleasant to think about. But if we go to the toilet or the sink or somewhere, lean over it and do a few gags, a few reaches, whatever your terminology is for this. I'll demonstrate it if you insist. Or even put two fingers down your throat, which is not a pleasant thing to do either. I never do that. I don't like that feeling at all. But we can actually release the tension that is in that pyloric sphincter muscle by doing that. Now, nothing comes up. We're not vomiting. We're not bringing anything up at all. And all you're doing is two or three or four reaches over the sink, so it's safe, of course, if some, I don't know, water or something happens. And that's all it is. It's a very fast and immediate physical action with a very specific task to get rid of that nauseous feeling. Now, I would never tell anyone to practice this exercise. There's absolutely no point at all. If you need it, you will know you'll need it and then go and do it if you need it. Where there is very important contraindications is people with eating disorders, and I would steer well clear. Don't give it to anyone who has a history of anorexia or bulimia, because that is could reawaken old patterns of behavior. It doesn't mean it will, actually. It might be perfectly fine with that client. They probably know what they're doing or what things felt like. So on the whole, unless anyone comes up with anything like this nausea, then that is what I would give them to do as an add-on, as an extra bev. No, Pia, beg your pardon.
Farah, this is really, really interesting. One of the reasons why I left the place where I was living is because my so-called friend, I thought was a friend, betrayed me big time. And I didn't see it. It was right under my nose and I didn't see it. I now know she's a narcissist. She's a covert narcissist, but I didn't see it. That came up in my meditation, in my AT meditation, when we see a person. Yeah. And she kept coming up and I couldn't understand what it was. And it was out of the AT meditation that I realized this. So it was just like a mind-boggling thing. However, when I found out what was actually going on and, you know, the blinkers came off, I saw the truth. I was for days, I would say probably 2 weeks. And sorry, but this is what I'm going to show you. I was walking around like that. And I couldn't vomit. And I hate vomiting. Hate it. Yeah. But that was my body. And I wish I had known this. Because I said to a friend, it's like I want to vomit, but I can't. So this is it. So this was actually the physical thing with her. Mm-hmm. It was like I just wanted to get clean.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The only way I can explain it, I wanted to get myself clean.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was really, I just wanted, like when you want to, normally, if you have eaten something and
that was
what I had. So if I have known this, I could have put two fingers, which I hate, but I could have done that. Wow, because I didn't vomit, but it was certainly my body wanted to do it.
Well, I mean, what it was really wanting to do was release that tension there as part of, what shall we call it? An expression, isn't it? A physical expression. And in the shock and what you were going through and the realizations and the associations of other stuff before and all of that stuff, wow, that must have been really powerful. And clearly it was, and that's what you wanted. Oh, and of course, if we'd had this conversation before all that had happened, you would actually have attended to that rather than wish, oh, I'm feeling so bad, that's what's happening to me, I wish it would stop. It'd be more like you're making friends with the heart, as your client was. Actually, I must do this.
Yeah, and I did do that. You did. Well done. I didn't go and, but that I could go on the street or I could go and I just wanted to. But when I was alone, I just allowed my body to express it. But it was bizarre. I've never had anything like that. Never. So this is so fascinating. So fascinating. It really is. God, the body is clever.
Isn't it?
It's
and
just
of course,
unbelievable.
With this particular reaction, it's the psychological and physiological coming together in a way which actually babies have entirely spontaneously. They wouldn't keep anything down that they needed. And sometimes, of course, babies, when they're crying and in a really distressed state for whatever reason it might be, they will be close to vomiting and
And you know what, Jane? It was interesting because this so-called friend, she wanted to, well, I found out what happened, but she wanted to steal my body of work, yeah? And I found, she took it to the psychological association and whatever and wanted to teach it, yeah? And I found out in a roundabout way. However, the person that I worked with, that has worked with me for 4 years, she had the same. She wanted to vomit too. And she says, I feel the same. But it was her physical impact on us that we actually felt, both of us. And I had some therapy and with a psychologist that specializes in narcissism. And she says, it is such a common one when we realize narcissism.
Yes. All right.
Because there's something that happens in the cells, because we have more positive. Oh God, I can't remember it. Protons, where they have less of it, and that's why they feed of us, or something weird. I can't remember. But there is actually a physical reaction to when we are close to narcissists that happens, and that's our body that tells us it. But Cinta, my colleague, she had the same.
Isn't that
Exactly the
fascinating?
same.
Yeah.
Really, thank you for
Yeah.
clearing this up. It's not a mystery anymore. Thank you.
Yes, and actually the vomiting exercise is in various books and bits and pieces, and then of course people start worrying about it, and in a way, you should know about it, which now you are, which is great, and but it'll be you, at your discretion whether you give it to someone. There are people, of course, who come to autogenic training and they are afraid of vomiting, and that's a phobia, and it's sometimes be quite severe. And even when they need to, because they've eaten some bad food, they don't allow themselves to. But so there are all kinds of different combinations of things. So in the end, I sort of agreed with colleagues actually not to teach it as a routine. Especially at the hospital, we get some weird and wonderful people there who I,
There could
could
be
what,
anorexia and all
and
that.
the all sorts of things that we don't necessarily know about. So I just make that a blanket thing. But if anyone in a group actually reported nausea, which as they wouldn't necessarily have, what should we saw should we call it a psychological injury? It's actually part of an autogenic process, but I would give them the vomiting exercise at that point. It's just explaining it as this is tension in that particular muscle. It wants to be released, and this is how you can do it. And just leave it at that. Beth, you have.
Yeah, interesting because I got given this from Alice, the vomiting
Oh,
exercise.
you were given it,
Yeah,
right.
and we didn't really talk about it a lot, but one
Right.
of the things that I would have expressed to her, and it was only with you talking, Pia, that I remembered, I had impulses or just the thought to throw up. And I never did, and I never felt any nausea. And so Alice, in her wisdom, gave me that exercise. And I'm okay with being sick. I really
Yes.
appreciate the feeling better, you know, if I've got a dirty
Afterwards.
tummy or anything like that.
Yeah,
It's cathartic in a way. Yeah, interesting, you know, because I was curious about why it wasn't in the standard course. And I understand, you know, the obviously it's not for everyone, it's not needed for everyone. Yeah.
Well, we could argue that none of the offloading is needed for everyone. That's what a lot of our clients would say. I don't need this or whatever. So I think, it could be that you do decide to introduce it institutionally. I did for many years, and quite a lot of people said, I'm never going to do that. And I said, well, you don't have to. It's fine, you know. But then people have it as a natural anticipatory anxiety, don't they? That people before they're going on stage for the first night, they will go and vomit before they go on stage. Or they go before their exam, they just feel they just need to do that. So it's perfectly natural, absolutely natural. But I don't think we would need to practice it. Got Donna and Pia.
Oh, here you
Yeah.
go. I wonder, would it be okay for us to
You
get a sheet on it? The actual, I don't think we have the sheet on it that
probably
way.
won't have the sheet. No, that's fine. I will certainly send you that.
Would love to have that, yeah.
Yes.
Just to see if it happens, you know. So what you're saying is through fingers down your throat, but
You
also just gag or
or just
like.
gag or do it in whatever way, it's
Okay.
mimicking vomiting. That's what we're doing. It's just
Mimicking.
mimicking,
Okay.
just like we
Mimicking.
are mimicking crying and we are mimicking anger and we are mimicking, we're just mimicking the action. Yeah.
Excellent.
I'd like it too, please, Jane, if you're
Yeah.
sending it out, because that's the
Okay.
most I've ever learned about it, and it's kind of bothered me. And those two words, intentional vomiting, it just brings to mind, people with bulimia and that kind of thing. And I was
Yeah.
thinking, oh my God, this is so dangerous, and it could really start somebody behaving that way,
Well, I've never known that, and I can't remember. I've had a number of people who've needed the vomiting exercise, and of course we could say that a feeling of nausea could be an autogenic discharge for somebody who has suffered bulimia and anorexia. And actually, that this exercise does do some really good cleansing, and so
Yeah,
on.
I realize that.
We couldn't say that it doesn't. And I think the caveat, I think for many years in the training team, was we shouldn't give this out.
Yeah.
And then I began to realize that maybe even some of the team couldn't face it. And so that's why they wanted to disapprove of it. I don't disapprove of it. I mean, I'm a nurse. It's something we need to do sometimes.
It's very useful, that the information that you've given me. I mean, I think my fear came from my daughter's teenage years. It's not that she had any problem. You know, I know she wasn't vomiting secretly or anything. But some of her friends became actually ill. You know, young teenage girls, how they want to be thinner and that. Mm. And I remember it be upsetting her, saying, you know what so-and-so's doing and, you know. But I have a funny sort of opposite effect of that. If I'm upset a lot by something, suddenly I might be on my way to a restaurant or something, and something happens and I know I can't eat. There's something just closes down my throat. Yes. And I know that if I forced myself to eat something, I would throw up. That's the way it felt for me.
Interesting. Yeah. And that ties in with our other knowledge that when we are under stress and distress, the whole digestive system shuts down. So closing off the ability to eat would be one of those, yes?
Yeah.
Jane, we have got that intentional vomiting exercise.
Thank you, yes. Madam Queen. Thank you so much.
No, inner admin queen. Yes, my inner admin queen. Yeah, last page of the client sheets on the intentional exercises.
Well, I wonder how that's there. Did I notice it was there and decided to leave it? Or did I put it there because it hadn't been for a while and I thought we would? I don't know. Thank you. If you've all got it then, in the back of your client sheets.
This is the email one I'm looking at. I haven't checked the binder. So definitely on the email.
It should be the same.
Yeah.
It should be the same, I would think.
What date was that sent, Beth?
So you know when you got the whole pack from Jane of the training material?
Yeah, I'm just going to look at the very last yellow sheet.
There's a folder called Yellow Section 5 Client Sheets, and then there's a file called ie-clientsheets.doc, and that's the Word version of the intentional exercises. Anyway,
yes, in mine, it's not in the personal motivational formulae. I mean, it's not at the very end. I think it's got to be in with the offloading exercises, which is the red section. Let's just see quickly. Intentional offloading exercises. Those are looters notes. So where are our client sheets for offloading exercises? They must be in here. They must be in here.
It's in the notes, page 16, intentional vomiting exercise.
In which notes?
Looters notes.
In Luther's notes, yes, it will be in there. That's a perfectly good place to be using it, but that's not one of our client sheets.
Oh, not in our client sheets as far as I'm aware.
So I think that's interesting. Well, don't let's waste any more time now. I will... Yes, it isn't in here. I must have been adhering to not... Okay, I will definitely send you one. It's not a problem.
That's great. Thank you.
Also, Jane, can you send us the email version of the assessment package? Because I've only got that in green in the folder printed out. I haven't got the email version of it.
Right. Okay. The assessment package. You didn't get that. Okay. But you got it in reality.
I've got the hard copy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the assessment package.
Yeah.
Email, electronic version, right. Everybody else has got that electronically, I presume.
Yeah.
To Bev. I wonder how that happened. So I must have sent them all out as a job lot. Anyway, not to worry. That's on the list.
A long list.
Yes, it's growing. Yes. Right. So we've done the vomiting exercise. Okay. Well, this is turning out to be a bit of a surprise.
This is really good to go through, actually. I really enjoy this.
Okay. All right. So the next question is about what do you know of generalized phenomenon? Could we have a guess and produce four or five things on there, do you think? Phenomena. Let's
Phenomena.
take the
Things
word.
that happen in their everyday life, are
What
they?
was.
I think we're focusing mostly on autogenic training. I think we are thinking about the autogenic state and the terminologies we use. So take the first word. The first word is
General.
general. So what might that be?
Things that are common across the board.
Across the board and the body, I'm thinking.
Yes.
Yes. So it could be something
Oh.
like, are you all right there, Pierre?
I think I've misunderstood it. So you're talking about what I'm at peace. So it's related, all these generalized phenomenon and all that is related to that question, is it?
These are, I'm sorry if they're badly written. This is perhaps our own fault. We got them from Luther's exam papers. They're just very short descriptions. Each one, what do you know about generalized phenomena? What do you know about paradoxical reaction? What do you know about sleep formula? We could
So I got it
say,
right.
what do these mean? What
Yeah,
does
I got it.
this mean? It's a ba badly phrased question. Sorry.
That's okay. I got it.
Okay.
That's what I thought it
Then I
meant.
think the first one is perhaps the trickiest because we haven't actually talked about generalized phenomena.
No, I'm not sure what this means, so I got
Okay.
a
No.
question mark.
Okay.
I don't
Okay.
know.
Well, a phenomenon, of course, is just sort of something a little bit random as some sort of event or occasion or episode or something of something. So it could be that the generalized phenomena for one person practicing the heaviness exercise is actually warmth everywhere. So it's everywhere, and they're actually feeling it's just a generalized feeling. But even though they're not practicing heaviness, it's actually warmth. Donna and Patricia, please butt in if you disagree with the things I'm talking about.
But Jane, isn't that what we call the paradoxical reaction?
No, let's go to the paradoxical reaction. Paradoxical means the opposite.
Opposite, yeah.
So if I'm talking about heavy in my exercise, but the feeling I get is light.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. However, as a relaxation response, it's very likely that we can feel warmth even though we're practicing heaviness or the other way around. So we just might, you wouldn't, honestly, these don't matter. You don't have to use this language. It's just that if you read about generalized phenomena, you would understand that to be doing autogenic training brings about this feeling and that symptom. And they're probably anxiety, not anxiety, relaxation related.
Jane, it does say somewhere in maybe in the timetable that this tutorial, we need to prepare it for the test that's coming up. There's a link
Oh,
between
yeah.
that. Yeah, so I just wanted to ask you about that.
We were also doing a similar thing. You know, we didn't have the tutorials then, did we, for the first test? Yes, but the tests are more in line with these sorts of questions. And so some of them might be there and some of them might not be there. We've adapted it over the years. So this is generalized information, if you like, which may well come up in one or two answers. Well, but they should come up in your answers for the test at the end of module two. But I don't want that, you know, it's not a hefty exam. It might take an hour and a half, 2 hours, or whatever it is, but it's not long essays or anything like that. You can write things in note form, just whatever you can remember from whatever you've read, stick it down there as long as it's relevant. I've gone on to the test now. Is that all
Yeah,
right,
that
babe?
was me asking. Yeah, no, that's
Yeah,
great. Thank you.
yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, these are these are important things. On the other hand, I'm confident that you probably know all this, and this terminology is all that we're looking at, rather than what you know or don't know. Donna, would you agree with that?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're kind of in all, we're in all this stuff all the time. And then the words you might or might not pick up from books or other things. So we've got paradoxical reaction already, haven't we? It's something which occurs, which is the exact opposite, or that's how we perceive it. This is the exact opposite of what I'm supposed to be doing. No, no, it's fine. It's your autogenic reaction. And it happens to be paradoxical to the task you're doing.
So like forehead warm when we were doing forehead cool, or is
Yeah. And if someone says, oh, I didn't do that very well, I got a warm forehead. No, it doesn't matter. It's a paradoxical reaction.
Yeah. So then I'm thinking of examples of the generalization phenomenon, like where, yeah, heaviness is the formula, but warmth is experienced. What other examples would there be for that?
Pretty much anything that you couldn't explain any other way.
Right. Yeah.
That's not a very nice answer.
No.
But as Anne was saying, and Stephen was saying, people's experiences are so, so different to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And to something generalised is probably going to be reported by the client in, I get that lovely feeling in my arms and legs every time I practice. I've no idea what it is, really, but it's just a nice kind of, I know I've sort of changed and gone into this state. So nobody can even describe it. With an awful lot of detail. But I think the main thing is going to be that it's probably pleasant. It's probably a relaxation set up because we've got autogenic discharges as being more specific and maybe identified by the client as actually that's a memory when I broke my leg or something of that kind.
And so it's not a training symptom then?
It could be.
Right.
I think it could be perfectly well just to be complicated. Yes.
Yeah.
I think somebody could have a generalized symptom, which is actually a training symptom. A training symptom like saliva or tummy rumbles is fairly specific and we know what that is. But if the whole generalized system is actually warm, that's probably from the same idea.
Could you look at, for instance, I am at peace and someone mm-hmm. having a very bad reaction of that being introduced to
yeah.
them?
What have we got here? What is the actual question? We've got peace and background images. Is that what the question is? Sorry, I should have this up on my... What? Sorry. Let me have a look on my system, whatever tutorial.
I believe the idea was, when we use the formula I'm at peace, not to use it in conjunction with visual imagery, because, you know, it may lead to something else.
You are quite right. Is our question that?
It's not actually formulated.
It isn't quite that.
What do you know of the following? Using I'm at peace and background images. But I think this is the fact that what
well, then talking. That's yeah, then that's the answer to the question. You just answered it, Sebastian. We would not introduce peace with think
visual.
Of the lovely field you slept in or the stream babbling beside you, because that might turn nasty. And that's the reason why we do not use visualization in AT. That's the very short answer to that question. Coming back to Patricia's question, well, what would you do? What is a bad reaction to the peace formula?
I had a client long time ago getting very angry with me when I introduced that one
mm-hmm.
because she was someone who was very highly strung and very stressed and that sort of thing. And she, how can you expect me to say that when I'm, you know how I feel? You know, she was quite angry that I suggested that.
Well,
introduced...
that's not a bad reaction to the exercise, actually. This is Jane Bird being picky.
Yeah.
It's actually a bad reaction to what's being explained to her. you didn't do anything wrong, but she just didn't like it.
I suppose it was because I obviously used it many times with different clients, and it had always been received very well. You know, they felt that so nice.
So it was, whose problem was it?
It was her reaction. But she said, what am I supposed to do with it? And I said, well, could you possibly think about maybe just allowing yourself to feel a little bit peaceful for a couple of seconds while we do it? And she tried it, and she did come around to it and said, yes, I can. Let myself have a few seconds peace.
Well, then you've answered your own question.
Yeah.
That's lovely. You've just, you only have to acknowledge, okay, yes, this is probably going to be a challenge, everything that you've been describing over the weeks. But hey, it's only words. I wouldn't even go as far, but then this is me. I say as little as possible. I say, look, let's just do an exercise and see what it feels like. And quite often, if you go a little bit further and say, do you think you might be able to allow yourself just a few seconds? Their brains can very easily come up with, no, I don't think I could. So if we don't say anything at all, we say, look, let's just do it. You know how to end an exercise. You can close if it doesn't feel pleasant. But don't try and dress it up in any way at all. And then she found her own result anyway. She could tolerate it.
It worked out all right in the end.
Yeah. But some people do associate it with death
what I've heard is the rest in peace.
Exactly.
And visions of headstones with RIP on and stuff. But again,
go on.
No, I was going to say again, I just talked to them, and actually at the end, these people probably are at peace now because they're dead anyway. When, you know, if you go down the route. But yeah, again, they manage to, when they do an exercise, they don't have that image again. It might have just been an initial reaction.
Just that initial reaction is very often with the peace word, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And I had someone who was in a group, and as soon as we finished the exercise, she held the floor. She said, that was absolutely horrendous. I was in a coffin and I had a sheet over me and I sat up in the coffin and then I lay down again. And I thought, oh dear, I wish she hadn't said that and put the wind up everybody else.
Mm.
However, the next exercise, I don't know, I must have said something mollifying and sort of said, oh gosh, that's really interesting. I wonder what that's about. And she said, I think I was in a past life somewhere. I was like, oops, okay, that's very interesting. But then we talked about something else, and then we did another exercise, and she was absolutely fine from then on. So it can be quite a provocative statement, but for the vast majority, actually, the idea of peace is actually quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Pia?
So what I understand now that the background images, they're not recommended anymore. Then it's said in the notes that if it happens that it's a person that's very highly have anxiety or have fear of death, it can be changed to I feel at peace or I feel calm.
Indeed, it can.
So can it be changed? Because I actually had that with Tess, the case study, and she says she understands what it is to be present now because she was never present in her body. So she actually asked me if it could be changed to I am present right now.
Okay. I think that's perfectly, perfectly all right. The only thing where I have a question mark over changing the formulae, or at least changing the formulae too soon before they've even tried it, maybe, then I really wouldn't want that, is if they don't like it, there's probably something that's going on for them. In the form of something coming up, some association or whatever else. And I would prefer that was addressed and looked at and discussed maybe or whatever. And then they will find that formula is fine. And so I think we've got alternatives for all the formulae, but I can't remember the last time somebody used one in all the things I do.
Yeah, I feel myself wanting to kind of share here. Maybe that's a great personal affirmation that could be used.
Yeah, and we did that.
Yeah, many people do.
I am present.
Oh, I see. Oh, sorry. I'm with you.
It turned into being the formula.
How lovely.
It is lovely. It is lovely, and I don't want to swap it for the peace one.
Yeah.
Just in case there's another sort of corner that just needs to be turned.
It was only because she is a Christian, and this peace is very much, when you go to heaven, you're at peace, you know?
Well, so, yes, but you see, we can laugh at it, but if she didn't want to use it, then let's talk about it. Let's just see what's behind it. Because there might be some leftover from a grief or whatever else. So I'm not saying never change it, but let her go home with it and see what it feels like. And offer reducing, just use it once.
Yeah.
And then close it and come out and see how she goes. You can always say, go to bring me if there's a problem with it, but
no, that's good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Good.
And of course the big, big error would be to do what everybody else does in meditations and say, imagine you're on the beach and the your toes are just in the water of the sea, and you just don't know how the brain is going to switch that around into something ghastly. So we never do that. We don't give visualization to the brain. Any visualization that emerges is very different. That is autogenic and coming from within. That's huge, hugely important.
I had somebody say to me, they were at an evening of meditation and various things, lovely evening. However, the guided meditation asked them to imagine their future self, and she got an image of some white wizard, and then that suddenly disappeared and she couldn't see her future self, and she thought that meant she didn't have a future and she was going to die. And that just examples what you shared, that actually other people's guidance can lead us into real trauma.
Yes. And then how is that dealt with? Because people don't realize what they've done. And just because someone didn't like that guided meditation, how are they going to respond to that really difficult reaction that that person has had?
No, and the response was, you know, that ultimately we all have a fear of death. But, you know, my response was that actually the image you conjured up, because your mind didn't readily have an image for your future self, was of an archetype of someone like Gandalf the White, a pure, good, wise being. And so she thought, oh, I'd never thought of that. And suddenly there was not the same fear there, you know?
Yes. Well, that's interesting, but that's still your interpretation.
Absolutely.
For her, which, of course, is still not quite. I mean, it's fine because it helped her, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But technically, we could say, actually, you know, what is all this about for you? And hopefully help her to get to that place. Or maybe she'd have got to a different place. And that would be fine.
Yeah. No, and I think that's right. Is actually let it be led by the client or whoever it is. You know, let them find their own way. It's more meaningful that way.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Of course it is. Yes, and that realization that comes. Where are we with these? They're useful, aren't they? Autogenic discharges. Do we know what those are? How would you describe at assessment? Do you mention autogenic discharges?
I do.
You do. Good. Sebastian, did you mention autogenic discharges or autogenic process?
Trying to recall my memory, not discharges, it's not very ethic, I would say, to say discharges.
Okay.
We
could call it reactions.
Maybe reactions. Yeah, reactions, definitely. Yeah.
But why have they spent all that time filling in that questionnaire? Because they're only coming to learn a relaxation technique. What on earth is all this about?
And we tell them that symptoms may get worse before they get
better. That is a useful one to say. Current symptoms might at first feel a little bit more marked or something. You don't have to sort of labour it and make it, but feel a bit worse before they get better. But then we know something is going on. That's something to say. But what else actually we should be saying? which explains why we want all this information on the questionnaire, Pia.
Well, what I said to her was that the body is so clever. It knows what to do. Mm-hmm. And even if those things that happen that she might not like, I can't even remember what I said, but right. It is the body's way of self-righting itself and just,
yeah.
And actually what I did say was that it was the body's like stored energy that hasn't been expressed and it can come out in many different ways. That's what I said.
That's a nice way to put it. I always say we have a great respect for autogenics because it's going to do its own work that we don't really know what it's going to do, but we can certainly trust that it's the right thing. And from there comes body, mind, memory. And yes. Sometimes we can get old things coming up. And it's quite useful to realize that sometimes we're doing an autogenic exercise, you get a pain in your knee. It reminds you of the accident when you fell off your bike when you were 11. And you think, my goodness, what on earth is all this about? And actually, that is what we call an autogenic discharge. I sometimes do use that word, or an autogenic reaction. And we're always pleased when those things happen because it shows that the system is clearing itself out, clearing out its old rubbish, I sometimes put it. And I think it's really important to say that at the assessment, because then you've got the client really understanding that this is something quite important and that something is going to happen. And then the fact that we don't know what is going to happen makes it all the more intriguing. And then sometimes at the end, people might say, I don't know if I really want to go down to the bottom of the and drag things up. And I say, well, you won't. If the body mind needs to, it will do it. But if it's happy staying in there, I then make a bit of a joke and say, look, we get the sediment at the bottom of a bottle of good red wine. It will sink down to the bottom and it will settle in you and you don't need to pay attention to it anymore. That's just an analogy that I use. But I think it's really important at assessment just to make sure that the client knows that they're undergoing something that is really quite special and unique to them, and that your job is going to be to teach them and to facilitate the process. And if you use language like that, you've got people on side before they even turn up for week one.
Jane, when I learned this, you know, all these years ago, I mean, I was only 12.
Yes.
I had very, very big reactions like discharges.
Yes.
And I wasn't told about it when I got it. And I thought I was going mad because I was spinning, I was like spinning around and flying up, you know, like getting so light and stuff. And I actually thought I was going mad. And I wish that I had been pre-warned that if something funny happens, it's okay.
It's okay. Yes. Tell me about it. Tell me about it and we'll talk about it. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah,
that is really tough. How is a 12-year-old supposed to know that is either not all right or all right? I mean, that's really difficult. Yes.
And then I came the week after, and she said, oh, that's, she played it down, you know, but I was a nervous wreck for 1 week because I thought I was going mad and I was a lost cause. You know, poor 12-year-old, you know. Yes.
And that. In our day now, if this was today, you should have been given short stitch. Just to go back to that, it would probably have happened in long heavy, which is heaviness part one. It would have been a very good idea if your person said, actually, this is all going on. It's a bit strong for you, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with it at all. Your body's doing what it needs to do, but let's just quieten it down. We can keep the process going. Not that a 12-year-old would know what that meant. We can keep the work going. But you're just going to do short stitch instead. We'll go back to that. And that's invariably
important to just pre-warn or just make it light. If something funny happens, then it's absolutely perfect.
It's what is going on, and we can just watch it. Yes. And sometimes we will know what it is, and other times we won't know what it is. And neither of that matters. Sorry, Donna.
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually, it can help with feedback. You know, when people don't really quite know what to write in their diary. If you mention these kind of things, then they're like, oh, so you wanted to know that I was a bit spinny or, you know, floaty or what have you. That we actually are expecting this. So these are the kind of things that you'd put in your diary.
Absolutely. Yes, that's hugely important. Of course it is. Thank you so much.
And also, Pia, I think what your story highlights is how important it is to let the client know that they can contact us at any time if things aren't going as well, or if they have any concerns, that we're available, that they don't have to wait a whole week and come to the next session.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then if they have to wait, well, maybe not a whole week, it might be 5 days or something like that. But if they then decide, oh, well, I won't do any more practice till I see them again, then you've wasted 5 days of practice and, you know, everything gets all upset. So, yes, it's much better to say, look, drop me an I do everything by email these days. Drop me an email if there's anything that you're bothered about. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
and you don't get that with counselling or other things, but we have good reason for it, as we're realising.
Yeah.
We're covering a lot. This is a good paper, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually.
Yes. Partial exercises.
Short stitch, neck and shoulders heavy, forehead cool.
Yeah.
Two out of three.
Short stitch is not one?
No.
No. And why wouldn't it be? Let's think that through.
Because it's the trigger.
It is the trigger. And why is it the trigger? What goes with the trigger? Well, sorry, what are you doing when you're practicing short stitch exercises?
Doing a full exercise.
Yeah, you are. You are sitting down, you've got the relaxation in place, you've got your eyes closed, you're doing a proper AT exercise, which therefore cannot be a partial exercise.
Yeah, no,
and the partials are the one where we're standing up, standing in a queue, walking, we've got our eyes open. Those, they are very, very important distinctions. Thank you so much, Pia, for putting the three in, because now we've worked
that's
out.
Right.
Yes. Yep. They are different, and people get quite confused, don't they, Donna, with those? I say quite confused, but yes, they do.
Mm.
And they say, oh, I did some part, I did some, what do they say? I did some short stitch while I was waiting in the queue. No, because your legs should have crumpled under you and you shouldn't have been.
That's great.
We need relaxation in the autogenic state. And if people get that message, they will very quickly understand the difference between partials and that. I think we've covered that question then, have we?
I think so.
I think explaining those two partials are very important because they're both really, really useful, I think.
They are.
You know, the forehead cool if someone's sort of a bit, particularly in the office or something like that, and they're, you know, becoming a bit, where was I? And the neck and shoulders heavy, it can be, we do encourage people to start using it regularly, and it can be.
So you would answer this question just like you have, what the partials are and how they might be useful, just in a quick sentence. That's all we would ask for. Thank you, Patricia. I cut you off, but that's what the purpose of this is, to keep it, everything as short as we can, because they are, particularly this bit, they're quite simple.
So is there a sleep formula as well as the dream formula?
I don't know where that idea sleep formula comes from. So I must go back to that. There is a personal motivator, there are one or two personal motivational formulae for sleep. But I would be far more interested in this question being about the dream formula.
Well, in the book, it says on page 2, sleep problems. And then after that, the dream formula comes. But I couldn't find anything with sleep formula.
You couldn't find a sleep formula. So a sleep formula is in the list of the personal and motivational ones, I would think. So let's say that this is a misprint on our part, and I'm very sorry about that. It should be the dream formula.
Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah.
So how would you succinctly describe what the dream formula is and what it's for?
It's for people who have issues with sleeping because they're afraid of their dreams, or they wake up having had a bad dream and can't get back off to sleep, so that sleep becomes a stressful event for them.
Mm-hmm. Although none of that might be cognitive, it might not be in their awareness.
Yeah.
But you've got the elements there. It's really for people who have frequent waking throughout the night. And if those wakeful periods are happening roughly every 90 minutes, then that might be when in the REM part of sleep, and that might be when dreaming might have occurred had they stayed asleep. So Luther developed this extraordinary theory that people have dream resistance. And so they don't know they've got dream resistance. And the frequent waking might be because, yes, then your next bit, quite right, they probably had a bad dream and woken up in a fright in the middle of it. Ah, I don't like that at all. And the idea is, of course, that the dreams we have really should be dreamt all the way through and resolved, even if it's a terrible accident at the end, because it's not a real terrible accident. It's only a dreamt terrible accident. So when we wake up in the middle of a dream and that's what happens, sorry, my hand slipped there, then that dream has been interrupted. So the brain has another attempt to have another dream and dream it through, dream through that thing. But no, it's been interrupted again because the brain says, oh, I don't want to go there. And eventually we get to the point where the dream doesn't even arrive. We're waking up before we've got there because the brain is in the habit of doing that. Almost saying, uh-oh, there's a dream around the corner, I'm going to wake up. And we don't know why we've woken up. That was Luther's theory. And the solution to the theory is?
It's the formula.
It's the dream formula. Okay. And it's not to help people sleep. It's not quite like that. The dream formula is just something they can use in their afternoon and evening practice and at night. And it helps them to stay asleep during dreams, which of course helps their sleep. But there's a subtle difference.
Mm.
The dream formula has been I found some extraordinary results, not in my own practice, but in my clients. I must have told you some stories about them. You'll find them in my book, I'm sure. So you were nearly there, Bev. And of course, the confusion is calling it the sleep formula because it's not. And I'm sorry about that. I shouldn't have been there. Dream formula.
It's good.
Okay. I think the other question was about personal and motivational formulae.
No, it's how do you deal with the client who has to go away for 2 weeks.
Oh, sorry, got that. Yes, yes, yes. How would you deal with the clients got to go away for 2 weeks? They've sprung it on you in week two.
If it's heaviness part one, I'd maybe use the short form of the exercise.
Right.
And if it's, yeah, that's what I would do, the short form, because heaviness part one has 3 days of the short form and the rest of the week on the longer form.
That's right, isn't it? Yes, just the heaviness in the arms. Mm. Yes, I mean, actually, this is a tricky one to handle because heaviness part one is the whole opener of sort of big autogenic training. You do not want to have your clients doing that for three. If they're going to miss 2 weeks, that's 3 weeks they've got on long warmth, or you know, at least 2 weeks on it. So I would be uncertain actually. Short form maybe. I'd rather. That they had told me about the holiday or whatever it is that's keeping them away before we started, and then start when they come back. That would be a really good answer to see you put on something. But of course, if that's not happened, or somebody's got to go into hospital, maybe they're going in for surgery, or there's lots of reasons why they suddenly can't manage the 2 weeks, we do need to put things on hold a bit. And we haven't got as far as the warmth exercise, which would be an ideal hold exercise, wouldn't it? So it's a bit of a tricky one. And have I answered it, actually?
I think what we did at the hospital was our break, I think it was Easter or something, came there. and we gave them a week on the arms and then a week including the legs. So we just lengthened the whole thing.
We lengthened that week. I'd forgotten that, Donia. Donna, we were doing the same dates at that point, weren't we?
Yeah. So they had a week on, including the arms.
Yes.
For a whole week. And then they included the legs.
And then it was Good Friday.
Yes.
So we had no choice. We had to not have a session. That's exactly how we dealt with it. And then they had a proviso. Look, email if there's a problem at all.
Yes.
Or the other proviso is actually just if it's a bit tricky when you get onto the long bit, then go back to the short bit for a couple of days to see what happens.
Absolutely.
Love it. Thank you for that. And the other time when I'm slightly nervous about people suddenly springing up a holiday or something is after the heartbeat formula.
Mm. Yeah, that's what it is. It's immediately following the introduction to the heart, the cardio.
Yeah. And that would have concerned me with your client, Pia, when you were working with her. That would have been was the formula for her, as it turned out. But it could have gone either way. So I would never want to do that. I would then put her back, say, look, never mind the new formula. Just practice the hold exercise till we meet up again. And we'll pick it up from there. Yes.
So the right answer here is not to introduce it.
Well, you see, the trouble is that sometimes you have introduced it, and right at the very end of the session, the annoying client will say, I'm sorry, I can't come next week or the week after. Oh, no, I wouldn't have introduced that.
Mm.
So that's a bit of a tricky one. We can't always know. And that's why it's good to plan it out at the very start and then always flag up, are you okay? Well, certainly you would say, are we okay for next week? But if anything changes in this schedule, could you let me know? Because we might just have to replan things, reschedule. And after the breathing one, that's a good time to have a break if that's when people are going to have one. That's a good one because you've married up the breathing with the heartbeat and presumably all is well. But even the breathing one, some people have difficulty with. So always email in between.
So for this one, would you allow them 1 week with the heartbeat formula and then 1 week, if they were going for 2 weeks, 1 week on the holding exercise, or give them the holding exercise for 2 weeks?
If you had just done them, you'd just given them the heartbeat one, I would actually say, well, I think it depends actually what the practice has been like. You have just introduced it, you have done one, let's see what it's like. And in that moment of wonderful insight that you had, Pia, with your client, then it would have been fine, wouldn't it? And we know that now anyway. And she had a completely amazing turnaround at that point. You could have perfectly well said, okay, continue with it, see how it goes. Yes, it really is. You're realizing now, aren't you? We've got clients to talk about that there's all sorts of options. But if the person had been a wee bit iffy with that heartbeat formula, I wouldn't have said, do it for a week and then go back to doing the hold exercise. I think I would have said something like, look, I think I'll give you this one because it doesn't actually have the heartbeat formula in it. But look, why don't you just pop it in from time to time and use it and just see what it's like? And you might not do it on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but it's there on Wednesdays just as a little taster to see what it feels like. That sort of thing I often give people. So you're giving them, you're not telling them, no, you mustn't do it because that could put the wind up them. But you could say, because it's this length of time, let's just play with it a little bit and do it this way. I've quite often done that sort of thing. And it all depends on how they received it on that first occasion.
So much comes down to talking and listening for how they're going. It's so difficult to give a standard answer, isn't it, to a question, because it will all depend on your client and how they're going.
We can almost say follow the client is the correct answer to everything, which in theory it is. And if you actually applied that, you could probably find a lot of answers to things. You have to ask questions. Thank you, Donna. That is so important. You get all your information from the client. And
if you're not sure, reach out.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because you've always got a supervisor, so reach out and see, you know. But, yeah, follow the client.
Great.
Right. If personal motivation formulae is the last question, is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we just think of page two on that sort of big bundle of information, just with some, what are the words? Directions, is that the right word? I don't want to call it rules and regulations.
Helpful pointers.
Helpful pointers, thank you, Bev. That's exactly what to call them. Right. Yeah. Right, can we fire them off?
Keep it simple and short.
Yep. Perfect.
Positive.
Positive, yes.
It has to be in the now.
Yes, in the present.
Present. What would say it... good intentions.
Yes.
Should not be negative.
That's right, we've got positive. Good intentions sound like New Year resolutions, and they are often ideas from other people. I wish you would or would not, and then we make a formula. Nah, it's got to come from inside you. Yeah. Well done.
Should be easy to remember and perhaps use clients' words.
Yes. Oh, very important. Clients' words. So we steer them towards their personal formula. And then if they've got... yes, that long email that was sent to me, which we discussed last time, has an awful lot of long clinical words in it, which didn't mean anything in human terms. So and from that point of view, discourage your clients from being too clever.
Think about the feelings that stuck with me with your training, about thinking about how they want to feel as opposed to the change they want to make.
Yes. Yes. And let's reframe that slightly and say, we will ask them, how will you feel when that change you want is made?
Yeah.
And it might be that wanting and the possibilities actually don't match. So, yes. So how will you feel when you've got to that? That's always the good one. Good one to remind them of.
That's a good one.
Yes, the example was a colleague tutor of mine, and we were doing one of these training sessions, and there was, I don't know, six people in the room, and we went round the room, and this person said, actually, I'd love to have some help because I don't have enough play in my life. Can you think of a nice phrase? Do you remember that story? And we went all around the room and everybody came up with something. You know, I have more play in my life, or every night I find something to play with, or I play with laughter, or I play with this or that. And this colleague of mine was nodding her head and saying, thank you, yes, thank you. Then I could, you know, she nothing was ringing true. That was quite clear. And it got around to me. I was last. So I was mean. I said, so what will it feel like when you do have more play in your life? And her face broke into the most enormous grin. And she said, easy. So we all roared with laughter. And she said, it's easy. It's easy. That's all it is. It's easy. Now, I didn't know quite what she meant. That didn't matter. She knew exactly what she meant. And she took that away with her as her personal motivation formula, just one word, or two, perhaps, or three. It's easy. And what she did with that, I have no idea. But in that moment, it gave her a lot of fun, which hopefully she would have had with her play. So we all had that moment of gosh, isn't that amazing? How lovely. Great.
Really lovely. Mm.
So we can get the surprises by asking the questions.
Beautiful.
And there was the learner bus driver who was going to fail his last attempt at his bus driving test. And he was a friend of my son's and knocked on my door and said, "You do this counselling lot, don't you, Mrs. Bird? Can I come and talk to you?" I said, "Well, all right then." And he told his story and he was really worried because he just had one more chance. And I said, "So what's going on in your test? What's happening?" And he said, "Well, I just, you know, they're taking marks off because, you know, it's a bit of a bumpy drive. I'm not reading the road properly. You know, they say, imagine you've got 40 pregnant women in your bus and I'm just sort of jerking and it's not really." And in my head, suddenly popped into a little rhyme. He'd said, "Reading the road." And it suddenly popped into my head, "Driving along with my passenger load, I'm calm and confident reading the road."
Oh, and, beautiful.
And I don't know where it came from. It just came, well, obviously from his own language. And I just, and he smiled. I mean, he smiled ear to ear. And so I wrote it down for him. And I said, "Look, just do it while you're shaving in the morning, or do it before you go to sleep. And even while you're eating your dinner, just recite it to yourself. That's what's happening," and everything else. And it was about a week later that the doorbell rang and he said, "I passed my driving test." I said, "I'm so pleased. How lovely. I'm so delighted for you. That's brilliant. Did you use your little poem, your rhyme?" "What little rhyme?" he said. And I said, "Well, don't you remember when you were with me? We wrote it down and it was, and I remembered it and I said it to him." "I don't remember that," he said. And so I said, "Oh, well, something has changed because you are in a completely different space now from when we met before." And he said, "Oh, I had a much nicer examiner." And I thought, gosh, this is amazing, because it must have been in the instant of me stating that rhyme to him, which provoked that enormous grin. And he went off with a bit of paper tucked in his pocket and all the rest of it. And he never used it. And then his perception was he'd got a lovely, friendly examiner. What's all that about?
You should sell charms, Jane. Yeah, definitely.
Certainly not. No, no, no. They would all crumble in the dust if I started doing that. No,
it's you were Florence. Have you read the book, you know, from Florence, whatever her name is, The Game of Life?
An old book. Yes.
Old book. Florence. Yeah, and she talks about, she just does exactly, well, she did just what you just did. She says an affirmation, gets thought into the clients. It's a lovely book.
Yes,
the one that has for the spoken word. It's all about affirmations. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Really, and you just did what she did. You actually changed a person's life just by saying an affirmation to them.
Yeah. Which just happened to hit the right spot. Well, I think there'll be millions, millions more times when I haven't hit the right spot, because really it had all come from the client, but he didn't have any kind of context or anything to put it in. So I did it. But anyway, I've written that down. Florence somebody. I'll Google it.
Florence Shovelshin. Okay. She was alive in 1800. I think she died in 2019, I can't remember. And she uses old language, but it's a brilliant book.
Yeah.
I actually got it here somewhere to Australia. It was my Bible.
Yes.
And it's in
yeah.
It's all about affirmations and stuff. I used her affirmations, a lot of them, when I was a teenager. Yes. For my AT affirmations.
Yeah, how lovely. Yes.
Yeah, I love her. She's beautiful. Yes. It would be a really lovely book to read.
I will certainly do that. It's the resonation. It's the resonance story, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what it does. So it does a connection with someone.
Absolutely. Yeah,
have you got any personal motivation stories, Donna?
Only about, I think I've said it before, about the man he was deaf and he was going blind, and it was really difficult to teach him AT. But we did. I printed it out in really big words, so it was just one sheet with just, you know, my right arm is heavy, times three kind of thing on it.
Yeah.
And we struggled through it. He was my case study, my second case study, I think. But we went through all the AT and everything, got to the end, did the personal motivational formula. And he said, well, I went back to see him a couple of months later. And he said, well, if you look at it, could have given me that at the beginning, because I just walked around my house saying whatever his formula was, and it changed his life. But whether he would have been in the same space to accept it had I have just gone with an affirmation,
well,
and said, why don't you walk around saying this, it probably wouldn't have worked. But yeah, that was, but that's what he needed from it, and that's what he took from it, so and it worked wonders.
But I think what you've just said, though, is hugely important, because that's his perception, is that that's all he needed, because that's all he's using now. Mm. But all the work he did in the meantime, will of course, it will have opened him up to accepting it and all that sort of thing.
Exactly.
But really, AT and the AT state is really just fertile soil, isn't it, for our affirmation or for our formula, our personal one?
I think so. Well, that's one concept, that when we're starting to use a personal formula, if we've been in the neutral state and in quite a deep state, then yes, we've got the fertile soil to drop the seed in. But none of that could come about, could it? I don't think, without going through all the other bits and pieces. We need to clear the decks. We need to get rid of the old.
Make room for it.
Difficulties. Make room for it. Exactly. And understand the permissions. Even if we don't understand them cognitively, we are aware that we are permitting ourselves to trust and be different and allow difference. I'm speaking on behalf of your blind man. That's quite a challenging one to take on for a case study, but actually fascinating. I don't remember reading it at all. Isn't that a shame?
Oh.
I bet it was good.
Mm.
Yeah. Have we done our weekend's work?
Whew. Yes.
I think we have.
Mm.
Great.
I don't think we've managed to send you any feedback sheets, have we?
No.
That's my fault. Patricia was going to do it, but she's had a lot on her plate.
Mm.
I think it's very difficult for you to look back right to the beginning and see what's what. If I get these together and send them, I think we can only ask you for impressions, can't we? It's a little bit of tick boxing and a number on a scale of 1 to 4, what you felt about a particular session. And you may not even be able to remember
them. Oh, so you mean it's feedback from us to you
to us? Yes.
Oh,
we didn't even explain that. Aren't that dreadful?
Yeah, I get it. No, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
And that's part of the stuff that I'm missing, having worked with face to face in the training, you know, for all these years. It never occurred to me to send you feedback sheets. Of course, you needed them. So we'll put something together and just see how you get on. But nothing hangs in stone about them, except if you've got a proper, or I say proper, but I mean real criticism about something, and something didn't feel comfortable for you or whatever, we need to know. So that's important as well. Of course it is. Otherwise it's not proper feedback.
But we can still, if you get them, we can still start them now, couldn't
you,
we?
You could do a little bit, yes. Yes, I mean, at least if I send you the one for this weekend, then that'll be fresh in your mind. And on the previous, okay.
Well, you put a happy smile and a good tick. It's been
well,
good.
Yeah, if you insist,
we won't hold
you to anything.
It's been great.
So we want to give you feedback at the end of each teaching sessions or not?
We should have given you a feedback form at the end of every training day, to be perfectly honest. And we haven't. But if I make them into Word documents, you can just do them and then send them back, or email them back.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. Yeah.